tweet at Today SOR.
I should have mentioned, by the way, we were and have been so far today and yesterday unable to reach Deputy Noel Grealish. We'd be happy to talk to him before the end of the programme. Last night in Belfast, the surviving partners of many of those murdered in the Northern Troubles gathered to launch a new online project curated by the journalist Susan McKay. Among those sharing their stories were Geraldine Finucane, wife of the murdered solicitor Pat Finucane, and Sarah Canning, whose partner, the journalist Lyra McKee, was shot in Derry just a few short months ago. Evelyn O'Rourke was there at the event. Evelyn, I gather this was part of a project called Stories from Silence.
That's right, Sean. I mean, this is a project that is capturing decades, really, of grief and pain right across all the communities in the north. And it's an ongoing project which has been coordinated through the victim support charity WAVE. They do great work. And it started by documenting the stories of older members of the community, but it's gone through several phases since then. And this phase is focusing specifically on the stories of people who lost their wives, husbands and partners. It was a very emotional occasion, Sean. It was hosted by Susan McKay, and the poet Michael Longley was there, and he read some of his work too. And we heard many of the stories that are included in this project.
Yes, and some of the well-known ones I mentioned at the outset. There are others, though, less well-known, but with equally tragic stories to tell. For instance, a woman called Mary Robinson, who lost her husband, Thomas Cunningham.
That's right. I spoke to Mary, Sean, and she told me about her husband, Tom Cunningham, who was just 23 when he died. And he was working at renovating a house in Strabane in County Tyrone on the 12th of May, 1982. And while he'd formerly been a part-time member of the Ulster Defence Regiment, he had left it 10 months before he was murdered. And at the time, Mary, who was Catholic, was pregnant with their first child, and she was a nurse at Altnagelvin Hospital, and she was on duty when the news came in that a shooting had happened. She knew that a casualty was to be brought into the hospital, and Sean, she says that she knew immediately that it was her Tom. She also told me that the IRA claimed after the killing that she should have let them know that he had left the UDR, but here she sat down with me and described those awful events of 1982.
I feel it's important that the stories are told and that they're heard, not just from my perspective but from everyone's, and it's the only way you'll get any respect overall, and I think that's really important.
You might tell me a little bit about your own story, because you lost your husband.
Mm-hmm. I was a nurse in Altnagelvin Hospital in Derry on the 12th of May 1982, and I was almost 20 weeks pregnant with our first child, and I was covering in A&E, and we got a call in to say that did we know there was a shooting coming in from Strabane, and I don't know why, but in that moment I just felt it was Tom. I have no idea. My heart just flipped over and I thought, this is him. And he was out of it at that stage. He had been a part-time member of UDR, but he'd been out of it for 10 months. Then, might have been half an hour later. Yes, it's your husband and it's the worst possible case. And that was it. And that was a Wednesday and I was 20 weeks pregnant on the Friday. And that she was then, my daughter was born in October.
And this was an IRA killing?
Yes, yeah. I mean, he was working as a labourer with a contractor, and they were retailing a bathroom for this disabled man.
Is it good to have opportunities to talk about him and what happened?
Oh, yeah. I think it is, yes. It's 37 years. Claire will be 37 now next month. But, you know, the 12th of May, all of these things start coming up, and it's just really impossible for me to control them sometimes. It's just, you're back there.
Such sadness, Evelyn, continuing after all of those years. You can hear it there in the voice of Mary Robinson. And I imagine that the families of people who died had many similarities in their stories and experiences.
That's right. I mean, there are many striking aspects during the evening's discussions. I mean, many spoke about the fact that the police never even got in touch with them after their partner died. They never really heard anything formally from them. And so many children were affected by the killings. And the question was discussed, how did you even tell children this news? One woman said she told her young children that their dad was killed by a man who had measles in his head, for example. And in some cases, some people have remarried and have had children, but others say it's been very hard to meet anyone else. And Sarah Canning, who was sitting beside Geraldine Finucane there, they made some really interesting contributions. Geraldine saying that she's been on her own for 30 years now, she hasn't met anyone else and it's difficult. Yes, you have children and grandchildren, but at night you close the door and it's just you. And Sarah Canning beside her added, it's hard to imagine being with anyone else. How does anyone else measure up?
Very interesting question indeed. Now, the Stories from Silence project, it's organised by the WAVE Trauma Centre.
That's right. And I spoke to the project manager, Alan McBride. And what's interesting about him, Sean, is that he himself lost his own wife at a young age, Sharon. And Sharon used to help out one Saturday a month at her father's fish shop, Frizzell's, on Belfast Shankill Road. And on the 23rd of October in 1993, two IRA men walked in with a bomb which exploded almost immediately. And 10 people were killed in that bomb, including one of the bombers. And nearly 60 were injured. And Sharon lost her dad, Desmond, in that also. But Sharon was 29, and she and Alan at the time had a two-year-old daughter, Zoe. So Alan is both the manager of A Wave and a Cross, very involved with this project. He's also a well-known advocate for victims' voices. But here he talked to me about the personal effects of the stories and the effects that Sharon's death had on their young daughter, Zoe.
One of the saddest memories I have of Zoe was because we would never speak about it and she would never speak about it. And she was about probably 8 or 9 years old, and she was going to a birthday party. And she had worn that little Tinkerbell sort of kid's makeup that you get, it's kind of fake makeup. And the birthday party was around the corner from the cemetery, and I was always going to the cemetery. So I went to the cemetery, and so we stayed in the car, and I went over, and I used to have a wee prayer there. We'd just do a wee thought. And when I got back into the car, Zoe's, the makeup had run all down her face, and you could see the mascara, the fake mascara, and she'd obviously been crying. And I think that was the first time I realised that, you know, we often say that kids are resilient, and I think sometimes they are, but I think we underestimate them if we think that they can't feel. But she chose to, you know, she chose to cope in a different way. I mean, she would have gone to the Wave Trauma Centre, which is where I was working at the time, and she would have other kids there. I mean, I remember one little friend that she was very close to was Leanne Rogers, whose father, Mark Rogers, actually was killed in retaliation for the Shankill bomb, and they became really good friends. Went to America together, and these were two kids who only knew each other because their parents were killed in retaliation for each other. You know, so I mean, those are the stories that we don't get to hear sometimes in Northern Ireland. But you know what? Today I'm in my 50s now. I look back, of course, with regret about what happened and all of the deaths—not just my wife, but all of the pain, all of the deaths, all of the people that are here tonight—and I will do everything in my power to make sure that these deaths never ever return. We need to get into the situation where we're actually looking out and reaching out to each other. And that a person's religion or what foot they kick with or whatever their political affiliation is should never be a cause for people going out and killing one another. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. That's what keeps me going.
Alan McBride there, Evelyn. Now, I mentioned that Susan McKay, the journalist, is curating this project.
That's right. And she said, look, these victim stories must be heard and remembered. And she talked to me just straight after the event too.
I think this project is really, really important because it captures the real voices of people who have experienced terrible loss. And it's very striking to me as a journalist, you know, that, you know, when I interviewed one woman who was bereaved in 1973, and I interviewed another woman who was bereaved in 2019, and their grief is so similar, you know, the rawness and the emotion. And it's because essentially these are love stories, you know, these are the stories of people who lost the person that they hoped to spend the rest of their life with, and it doesn't matter how long ago that happened. And when a person is bereaved through violence, first of all, it's a huge shock and trauma in the short term, and there are things like, how do you tell your children, how do you cope without maybe the person who was the breadwinner in the family, all of those sort of considerations. But also, you know, listening to some of the older people, you realise it isn't just a once-off event, it's something that transforms your life. You know, I'm very happy with the event, but I do find it so tragic that Sarah Canning was here, who lost her beloved Lyra just 5 months ago, you know, talking in a room full of people where there are women who have lost their husbands and men who have lost their wives 10, 20, 30, even 40 years ago, and experiencing the same kind of grief.
Susan McKay there, Evelyn. And finally, you spoke to Sarah Canning.
I did, yes. Sarah strongly believes that, you know, a project like this, that it's essential to tell the stories of the loved ones left behind. I mean, for example, Patsy Gillespie's wife, Kathleen, was there, and she gave a very powerful contribution about the effects of his death on her and the family. But here in a wide-ranging interview, she talks to us here on the show for the first time about her love for the people of Derry, her comments to the Taoiseach about the political situation in the North, but of course, all about Lyra. And she started, Sean, by describing how they first met.
We met on Plenty of Fish, which is a dating website.
Very modern, trendy way to meet.
Super millennial.
Online.
And yeah, I mean, we were talking for a few days and we met up and just got on ridiculously well. And I realised who she was a few messages in, and I had read her writing before, and I had really admired her as a journalist. And was kind of just like, oh my God. I remember like reading one of her pieces and I saw her byline and her picture was on it. And I was like, oh my God, I mean, she's cute. She's from Northern Ireland. She's a lesbian. Never in my wildest dreams imagined I would ever run across her, because it's just not, you know, I love a very standard, bog standard life. You know, everybody that I've ever gone out with had just a general job. So yeah, I mean, I met this person who was just phenomenal, who was so interesting, who was so genuine and had such a big, big heart.
And funny, everyone said she was funny.
Oh, she was hilarious. Now, she wasn't always intentionally funny, but she was funny. We had the best time. And even whenever things were hard, and we weren't perfect because no one is, but even when things were hard, we would find a way through it. We would talk it out and then we would laugh about it. And listening to the stories of some of the ladies in there, you know, some did meet someone else and built a new life. And others didn't. And I can understand kind of both sides of that. I can understand that desire to not live the rest of your life without love and without companionship, because it's hard. You know, I miss Lyra every day.
Can I ask you about the funeral? Because what I thought was astounding was your clarity, as in you spoke to Taoiseach Leo Varadkar that day and you spoke to Karen Bradley in the middle of all your grief and, you know, the whirlwind around you. How do you feel about that now, a couple of months later?
My message remains exactly the same, and I have reiterated it to the Taoiseach when I met him a few weeks ago at Belfast Pride. We are being failed. Northern Ireland is a very difficult subject to deal with, and I think that a lot of our politicians aren't quite as focused on that as they could be.
Can I bring you back to the aftermath of Lyra's death and the outpouring of, I suppose, love and support that you got? How do you describe that now?
It was fantastic, and honestly, I wouldn't have expected anything else from the people of Derry and the people of Ireland at large. Derry people are really good-hearted. You know, the vast majority of people, I still get people stopping me in the streets now. I have people coming up and almost crying, talking to me about their feelings around the situation. And that's Derry people. That's the heart that's in the city. And I mean, people in Ireland in general, I think there is a lot of heart. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of outreach. And we feel things quite deeply. We're quite a nation of saints and scholars, as they said. And there definitely is like a lot of deep feeling.
Have you been getting lovely letters and cards from people?
So many lovely letters and cards. I've had so many really nice gestures from people. You know, we've had famous people reaching out. We've had ordinary people off the streets. I had somebody this week who sent me a lovely card with two tickets to go and see Saint Sister when they play Derry on the 20th, which I just think is phenomenal. You know, and it'll be quite an emotional gig because the Gairds played Lyra's funeral. So it's things like that that really touchy.
I suppose for you then, you've seen the absolute best of life in Derry, twinned with the absolute worst.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, it's one of those things. I grew up during the Troubles and I've seen lots of things happen in Derry, and it has been a hotbed of a lot of activity. And it's really sad to see the fact that we are sliding backwards a bit. But,
and is that how you feel all these, what, nearly 5 months later? Is that how you're feeling about it?
There's definitely a backslide, and I think there's just a lot of people here very good at manipulating the current political situation to meet their ends, and they are using young people as a means to do it. They're indoctrinating people. They're no different to ISIS in that way. You know, they're using a situation that's unclear and unsure, and an economic situation that's incredibly volatile, and you know, it is detrimental to people. You know, people are living in poverty and struggling to see a future and struggling to see a way out, and then they're offered this prestige and a name for themselves, and that is something that really appeals to young people when they don't have anything else.
Susan made the really compelling point that there were people in the room there who'd lost their loved one in 1972, and you're sitting there and you lost your loved one in 2019. How do you reflect on those kind of observations, on being this younger face of the Troubles?
What I kind of found listening to it is that the feelings haven't changed. You know, there's these ladies and gentlemen are sitting here, they're telling their story about the person they loved being taken from them, and the feelings in the aftermath of having to relay that information to people. I mean, I made the worst phone calls of my life in the middle of the night on the 19th of April. You know, I had to contact, my sister had to contact Lyra's family. So I made the phone calls to people that I knew Lyra loved and who loved Lyra. These are stories we don't hear. And that's, I think, the thing that stops us from maybe understanding where this desire for justice comes from. You know, I think if we knew a wee bit more about how just heart-rending the stories are, we might have a bit more compassion.
What an impressive woman. 5 months after that tragedy in her life, the loss of her partner, Lyra McKee, Sarah Canning there. That is Stories from Silence. That's a project. And if people, you can actually go online to hear more.
Yes, Susan's done the interviews with these people. They're all there on the Wave website.
Evelyn O'Rourke, thank you very much indeed.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.